That's the first question I'd ask is what defense they run, the scheme they run, and how they plan to utilize me in their defense. Because I don't want to commit to a team that's only going to use me to be a depth guy. Like, I don't got time for that. I got 6 months to play ball, and I'm trying to get to the next level.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison, here as always with my co-host, Neruda Perdomo. Really good episode for you guys today. But first, we took a week break last week, so I haven't really got to hear much about Utica basketball, Ruta's life, so just talk to me about those two.
Yeah, man. I think for me personally, life's been pretty good. You know, we're in about the third week of the semester, so it's flying by, but, you know, I got a handle on my classes, got all my textbooks and stuff like that, so just had to adjust to the new schedule a little bit. And basketball is going pretty solid, man. I mean, we picked up a big dub over the weekend, 2-0 weekend. You always love to see that. And obviously the game against Nazareth was crazy environment, high level game. So, you know, we have senior day this weekend, which I'm super pumped for. I'm gonna have all the fam there. Mitchell's coming, you know, Justice, all my, you know, this one kid, Brandon. I don't know if you met him. Did you meet him when you came here?
No, kid, I don't think so.
My roommate, Brandon.
Oh, fact. Wait, I don't know if I met him, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So he's coming all the way from D.C. For senior day. So it's going to be a cool little weekend, but that's pretty much it, dude. That's pretty much it. What you been up to?
Same old thing, you know, classes, pod, basketball. Bro, this semester is actually crazy for me. You know, I got 20 credits trying to balance doing the pod, stay locked in on hoop. It's definitely been stressful, but you know us, bro, SOE, we always going to get it done.
Get it done, man.
Nah, facts. But same as you guys, 2-0 weekend. Ours wasn't as, I want to say impressive, but, like, exciting as yours. You guys came back from 25 in a game. That's wild. But we went 2-0 this weekend, two big wins. Give us some more wins in the column, boost our standing in the E8. So that's always good. Definitely got a big weekend, though. Got Cuca and Amara, two teams we already beat, but got to stay locked in because we know they easily can beat us. They score a lot, both teams, so definitely locked in with that. Senior weekend, next weekend for us, I'll talk more about that in the next episode, though. But today's episode, we got Curtis Harris-Lopez, who had a phenomenal year at phenomenal career at Holy Cross, locking it down at free safety position, a few pick sixes, returns kicks, can really do it all, like come downhill, hit you, can, you know, read the defense well. He's was a captain, so, you know, he's vocal, he's a leader. And it was a really good conversation. I mean, we talked a lot more about, like, you know, college football landscape, stuff going around the country rather than just, like, what's going on in his career. So I definitely like this episode, and I want to hear what you guys say because that's your boy.
Yeah, man. So it's funny with Curtis, bro. I haven't seen him in so long, bro. But, you know, that conversation that we had, it just kind of like brought me back to like memories of AAU. Like, I know you got like AAU teammates that you're still cool with, that you made a lot of memories with. So my 2 years, I think, that I played for the DC Blue Devils, I think I was only Curtis's teammate for one of them. But regardless, like that spring, like I met a lot of good dudes on that team, like Brady Cummins, who's playing for Colgate. He was on that team. My boy Jackson Cox. He was really tough in high school, but he ended up just going to Howard and studying there, which he loves it there. And he was on the club basketball team there. He was trying to walk on for a little bit too. So it was a great team, bro. And talking to Curtis, I mean, you know, back then in high school, he was a baller, bro. I mean, he was nice at ball. He was really good at football, and, you know, he was always, as a kid, like, he knew what he wanted, bro. He was always like locked in. I was like, and like I said in the episode, like, I would talk to him like, yo, you trying to go prep for football? Like, because I was in prep school. So I had kind of known about that scene. He was like, nah, bro, I don't need it. Like, I got the connections to make it where I want to be. And, you know, you hearing that, and it's like, you know, he's from New Hampshire, which let's be clear, like, not a lot of Division I football players are coming out of New Hampshire, like, are getting recruited out of New Hampshire, right? So he had that belief in himself from day one when he was 17 years old. Then he gets to Holy Cross, gets hurt that first year, so he has to redshirt. So and then comes back the next year, and for the next 4 years, he's basically like a main defensive piece for them, and is a key like a cornerstone of their defense, and is helping them win, go to the FCS tournament. So he said he had a great career there, bro. He's a hell of a player. Great dude, solid dude. I'm really excited to see what he can do in his future, bro. I know he's got big things ahead. And he's going to kill at JMU, but definitely a great conversation with bro, and I'm excited for the viewers to get to know Curtis.
Yeah, no, I didn't even say that when I was introducing. Like, he's got an extra year of eligibility. He's going to JMU. That's big-time football, FBS football, and JMU's just coming off a really good season. So a lot of eyes are going to be on that team, and, you know, that's perfect for Curtis because – his ultimate goal, he's trying to play in the NFL, and like me and you definitely going to be supporting him. We think he could do it. He's a gym rat. So, I mean, definitely can see that. But like you said, like he just has like a clear head. He's always it seems like he's always calm and collected, got a level head. And I think that helped him. Like he talked about how the transfer portal is like a cold world, but it didn't seem like he was tripping in it. Like he was just staying patient, waiting for JMU to contact him. And, you know, eventually they did. And Now, hopefully it's going to pay off for him because, like I said, he's a gym rat. He deserves it all. And I really, like, we got into a conversation about Coach Bob Chesney, like, going to JMU and having a 9-4 season. But, you know, their fan base still saying, like, oh, we can do better. Like, that wasn't a good year. And I feel like people don't understand, like, how tough of a move that is. One, just in general, FCS to FBS football, like, that's a big difference. He had to, you know, bring his staff, bring some of his players, and then blend all of that with JMU's culture. Like, that's hard in itself. And then, you know, now, like, you're in a better conference. You're playing better teams week in and week out, playing high-level teams, and he's still getting wins. Like, I forgot what team they played, but they put up, like, 70 points against a high-major school. That's crazy. And, you know, Coach Chesney's just been in winning programs throughout, like, he dominated when he was at Holy Cross. 5 straight Patriot League titles. That's unheard of, basically. And then JMU winning season, going to a bowl game. But it's just sad that, like, I want to say it's sad. I understand fan bases get passionate and stuff like that. But it's just kind of crazy that it's, like, kind of overlooked. But, I mean, yeah, like you said, it was a really good conversation with that boy Curtis. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, but those are mine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nowadays everyone wants that instant gratification. So, you know, it's a process, Brody. Like, you gotta give it some time. I mean, obviously, if you see stuff in year one where it's like, yo, like, this person shouldn't be around, then you make a decision. But that's not the case with Coach Chesney. I mean, he's a winner, obviously. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, they scored 70 on UNC. I looked it up real quick. And 9-4 is not a bad record at all. And like you said, they went to a bowl game. So I know a lot of coaches out there who would want a 9-4 record. You know what I'm saying? So definitely a great conversation with Curtis, bro. Really, really happy he got on the podcast. He was more than willing to do it. And I'm really excited for the viewers to get to know him. And I'm really pumped for my boy's future, bro. He's going to do big things.
Nah, 100%. I mean, we talked about a lot more than just his career. You know, NIL, how it's affecting basketball now. What's a better feeling, making a big play in a basketball game or a football game? Like, everything you could think about, we talked about in this episode. So stay tuned and let's hear from Curtis. All right, we're here with that guy, Curtis Harris. How you doing today, bro?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you all for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you getting on, my boy. I've known my boy Curtis for a long time, man. So definitely excited to get you on the pod and have a great conversation, bro.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
Word, bro. Like, what's the offseason been looking like? I know you still got an extra semester at Holy Cross, but obviously we know you going to JMU. So just, like, what you've been working on personally, what's the day-to-day schedule like for you?
Yeah, it's just been a lot of training. I've been doing a lot of two-day trainings. I lift in the morning most of the time, go to class. And then in the afternoon, I've been doing a little program by a kid named Justin Mucci. He's from New Jersey. He's got his little lifting thing going on. So I've been following his program, trying to get my body right for the season. I had a few issues last season with some, like, lingering issues. Nothing that, like, took me out for long periods of time. But I've been trying to get that right just so I don't get any of that at JMU.
That's what's up, bro. Are you going to be a grad student at JMU, or are you going to be like a fifth year senior? Like, what's the school situation looking like for you over
there?
Yeah,
so I'm going to be a graduate student over at JMU.
What are you studying over there, bro? Yeah.
So I actually going to figure that out in the summer. At Holy Cross, I'm a sociology major. So I got to see what kind of things I can do over there. I'm planning maybe to do something like communications where I could help with sports management. So we'll see how that all goes.
Yo, bro, that's crazy. I'm a double major in communications and sociology.
There you go, man. So I'm probably going to go down the same path, see where that takes me.
Facts. Was that something that, like, we know how important football was in your decision to go to JMU, but there was any consideration to the school aspect, or it was mostly athletics?
Yeah, so when I got down there, actually, obviously the campus is way larger than Holy Cross. So there was two parts to campus, and everything, it just seemed like a right fit, right? I went down there, my eyes were wide open. I was like, wow, this is FBS football. They have the stadium in the middle of the campus. That's humongous. A big piece of why I chose JMU was because the coaching staff, really, they're the same coaching staff I had at Holy Cross. So the connections to the staff was easy. I didn't need to, you know, meet new people. I knew how the staff works, right? What they want, what they expect from a player. And then I understand what they expect in their parts, their goals. So it kind of just all fit right.
So you said a lot of those guys at JMU on staff used to work at Holy Cross.
Yeah, damn near the entire staff.
So when did those guys leave for JMU?
They left right before spring season of last year. So right after last season's finished. Okay. So the whole spring was a new staff. And then obviously the whole season was a new staff. So they had just left.
I mean, I'm kind of curious about this before we get into the larger part of the conversation. How is that for you? Like, you know, for like your last year having a new coach and stuff like that, like what was that adjustment like? Like, talk to us about that.
Yeah. So something new. I've never had a coaching staff before, or a coaching change, sorry, before. So it was something that I just had to figure out on the fly. Luckily, I was blessed with a good coaching staff that had just replaced them, which is good. Dan Curran was a head coach at Merrimack College before he came to Holy Cross, right? So he had experience on actually learning how to win and things of that nature. He came in actually one time to Holy Cross and happened to beat us in our own field. So like he knew what it takes to win. I was lucky enough to get a great safety coach from UMass, Coach Jesse Montero. So I lucked out with that. So it was tough, honestly, at first, because you know you have a lot of new things to adapt to, what they believe in, what they want for the team. So it's two different ballparks, but you just got to buy into what they want and trust into what they want to do for the season. So,
yeah, I mean, that's like a big decision whether to, you know, stay at Holy Cross and learn to that like new system or go where you're comfortable. And I'm kind of wondering before we get back to like growing up playing football, but was that like, were you think, because a lot of your teammates transferred from Holy Cross to JMU when the coaching staff left. So was that something you were thinking about too, or you knew like I'm finishing at Holy Cross?
Yeah, it was definitely a thought. Obviously, when you first hear that your coach is leaving, you kind of want to go with him. But then I thought about kind of the future and say football doesn't go the way I want it to go. Like I need a degree from a really good school to get me a job in life. So I figured I would stay here at Holy Cross, get my degree, hoop for my last senior season, and then figure out the plans from then on. So that's what I did. I stayed, hopefully get the degree, and then we'll figure out the rest in the future.
That's fire, bro. And it really seems to me, you know, just throughout starting this conversation, I mean, obviously I knew you prior to this, but you got everything planned out, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? You know what you want, and, you know, you're very calculated with the decisions that you're making. So I definitely respect that out of you, bro, for real.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That means a lot.
For sure, man. And I want to, like I said, I knew you prior to this interview. So I want to introduce the viewers to Curtis Harris. You're from New Hampshire, Nashua South. You went to Nashua South High School, correct?
Right? Nashua North.
Nashua North. So you went to Nashua. Yeah, I'm awful. I know
it's a lot. Don't even worry. Don't even worry. You're good.
So you went to Nashua North. You played basketball and football over there. Yep. So first, just tell, before we start talking about why you started playing football or recruitment, just talk about growing up in New Hampshire, playing sports in New Hampshire and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I loved it. New Hampshire gets a lot of hate, though, for, you know, a lot of people don't know where New Hampshire is, really. We don't really, like, usually get a lot of respect in terms of sports. So getting into recruitment on New Hampshire, it was kind of hard because obviously not a lot of people were going to come and see me really play. So I was actually lucky enough for my head coach. He had enough connections where I could get something going, get something spiraling. he studied at Sacred Heart University. So I was able to get my first offer from there sophomore year in high school. And I kind of just got things rolling. And a few more offers came in from the Merrimack. I had a few Ivies. So it was tough, but at the same time, I was able to adapt and kind of work with the resources that I had. So it got me to where I am today.
Word. So you was a hooper too. I'm kind of curious when you started realizing like, all right, basketball might not be my passion. I think like, were you just always better at football? Talk to me about like deciding those.
I was a big aggressive kid growing up. So football was kind of my outlet to really relieve that aggression without getting in trouble. You know, obviously you can't fight somebody or tackle somebody in basketball. So that wasn't the route, but I think freshman or sophomore year that football was really where I wanted to go. It was a hard pill for my dad to swallow, because obviously Rudy knows my dad and he's big into basketball. He played in college. So that was the biggest thing, was kind of just letting him know, like, you know, basketball isn't for me, and you're gonna have to accept that football is, but in which he did. So I had fun with basketball, but football was the route to go.
Yo, Rudy, you know, like how you're playing against a football player right now, like, just mm-hmm. how does Curtis remind, like, he plays like that, or he's like a hooper?
Damn, it's funny you asked that. It has been a long time. I mean, we played AAU, I think, when I was like 16 or 17, probably around those ages.
It was like,
So it was a little bit, but I remember Curtis had a little bag, bro. You know what I mean? He was locking shit. He was locking shit up, though. He was playing that defense was his thing. He liked doing the chase down blocks and shit. So he wasn't the atypical, you know, football player that tries to bully, you know, run through everyone and stuff.
I'm not here to foul. I know how to play ball.
All right, sure. I'm just making sure.
KJ trying to get me going. He's trying to get me going.
But I was gonna say, bro, because I remember when like we would talk about like, you know, you, because I remember asking you when I was younger, like, did you ever think about going to prep school? And you immediately shut that down. You were like, nah, bro, like I have enough connections to get to where I want to get to, like straight out of high school. So, and New Hampshire, bro, honestly, like I remember like Exeter High School has some good teams. Winneconnet has some really good teams. So like the football was pretty good, bro. It's just the recruitment, like you're saying, wasn't really there for majority of players, or a lot of people are not coming to New Hampshire to come watch football, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. So that was actually another question too, like you just asked about prep school, was if I was going to leave or not. But like I said, I had the connections where I didn't need to leave. So I was able to stay where I was most comfortable rather than going somewhere else and kind of banking on something that I don't know is really going to hit or not. So I decided to stay, and I'm honestly very happy and glad that I was able to stay, because then I was able to finish high school with my friends, my best friends. So it was good.
100%, Brody. And so, like you said, you got offers from Ivy League schools, some Patriot League schools. So ultimately, what was the decision to go to Holy Cross? And were there any other schools that you were heavily considering as well?
There was a few. A lot of them were Patriot League schools. So it was kind of just a battle of really who was a better school in that sense. But in terms of why I chose Holy Cross, one main reason was kind of it was close to home. So if anything were ever to happen, I was able to get home to my family. We only live 45 minutes from here, from Worcester. So that's good. I have family that lives in Worcester. So realistically, if it was a big, big emergency, I could go see them. So instead of me getting homesick, I was close to home. The people that Holy Cross, the teammates, this really made me feel so welcomed when I first got there. And honestly, I felt like I was already on the team as a recruit when I visited, which is a really special feeling, especially because as a recruit, you're in there, you're kind of shy and don't really know what to do. You're really quiet, but they made me feel like it was home. The staff was the same way, man. I just fell in love with the campus. Seriously, honestly, everything about it was just like, I knew this was home as soon as I got there on the first day.
Yeah. I'd be listening to like a few NFL podcasts, Richard Sherman's pod, Amon Ross, St. Brown Brothers pod. And they ask mostly like offensive players, like, what was your welcome to NFL moment? It's always like, oh, I got hit like this. But I'm kind of curious from the defensive side, what was your like welcome to football? Like, did you get burned on a route? Something, a running back come downhill, truck you? Welcome to college football.
My college football moment, welcome to it, was we were doing drills in practice. And at this point, I wasn't really up to date on the speed and how practice really ran. So I was new to everything. And this was the first time I ever got yelled at during a drill. And the coach, he said some things, I'm not going to repeat it, whatever. But that was like my moment. I like messed up the drill. He like ripped me. And I was just like, damn, like, this is real. This is college football. So let's get into it now. And then, from then on, I locked in and now we're here.
Word. What were some of the, like you said, like you locked in and now you're here. What were you kind of like focused on throughout your career trying to like improve on? Is it like technique? Were you trying to get in the weight room? Yeah.
The main piece was my size. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest differences between D1, D2, and D3 is really the size and the speed. And coming out of high school, I was like 180 pounds, I think. I was light, skinny, new, and the Ruta can attest to it. I wasn't like a big, big kid. So that was the biggest thing, was getting my size up so I'm able to take on bigger dudes like tight ends who are 6'5", 6'6", weighing 250. Like, obviously, they're going to throw me if I'm 180 pounds. So that was a big thing, getting my size up, and then my speed, because I'm going to have to cover guys in the slot and receivers and skinny, you know, receiver guys that are running 4.4s, 4.3s. So that was the biggest thing, was getting my size up and my speed right so I can make sure I can play with these dudes.
Word.
That's crazy, because it's like, it sounds like that's like a delicate balance, right? Like, you have to be pretty much like, you have to be strong as hell so you can guard all these tight ends like you're talking about and, you know, make like good tackles. But also, like you're saying, like, you have to be like you have to be cut enough or not like too big to where you can't cover like a fast wide receiver. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you said you came in.
The happy mediums in between both sides. So,
yeah, bro. I mean, you said you came in as a freshman 180. I'm saying on Holy Cross 206, bro.
Captain, yeah. Bro.
it's actually true weight. I'm telling you, bro, I put the pounds on, I got thicker, and then like everything just took care of itself. The hard work just came into play, so
that's fire.
Yeah, I want to hear your opinions on like what the hardest position in football is, because I feel like every player says their position is the hardest, but I can make a real case for the safety position, because you gotta like, I also want to hear your like process on a snap, but you gotta like see what formation they're in, and if it's a pass, see what corners might get cooked on a route, or if it's a run, like where the opening is. So I just want to hear your opinions on, one, the hardest position, and then your actual like process when a snap goes off.
It's hard, honestly. It depends just where you look at it. So I'm going to go with corner as the hardest position to play. Reason being is corners are covering guys man-to-man most of the time at all times, right? You're out wide on an island, just you and the receiver with a whole lot of space to cover. So I think playing corner is one of the hardest things to do, really. And like, I give corners props all the time, because obviously I'm on the same side as you, so I understand what you're going through. To answer your question about like the process, you're really like the quarterback of a defense. So you gotta get your call or give a call to your linebacker, and then give a call or get a call from the corner. So just like a quarterback giving a call to the entire line, and the receivers are doing the same thing as a defender, while also trying to mess with the quarterback's head, moving around certain places and communicating with the other safety on the other side of the field. So you both are on the same page, so you're not running into each other or doing the wrong thing. So there's a lot that goes into it. And then you got to start, as the play develops, you got to start reading releases. You got to start reading offensive linemen and whether they're doing a kick step for a pass, or if they're down blocking or whatnot, if whether it's run or not. So there's so much that goes into it, and it's got to be like that. You got to make your decision quick and go with it. So. Safety's hard, but at the same time, covering a guy one-on-one most of the time for 80 snaps a game is also hard, especially if you're running fade balls 24/7. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's probably why, like in football, like you guys have so many damn meetings, bro, because it's like so much preparation that goes into that.
You got to be on the same page at all times with the D-line and everyone else that's on the field. So it's really all 11 people got to be on the same page at all times, really.
Yeah, bro, because I know it's like with the guys here that play football at Utica, like they have meetings all day pretty much just to play on Saturday. Day. You know what I'm saying? So you have to – they have the, you know, offense meetings, team meetings, defense meetings, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the positional meetings. So all that stuff just to prepare and see how a team, you know, plays and get in the film room too.
Yeah, so in camp, I'll give you a little day. So during camp, usually wake up like 6 a.m., get to breakfast for 7, probably have about 45 to an hour to eat. You probably start meetings at about 8:15. That's special teams meetings. And then you start getting into your regular positional meeting with your coach. That's when you start reviewing film. Then after that, you'll probably lift at some point, and then you'll eat. You'll get ready for practice. You'll practice. And then after practice, you'll go eat again. Then you come back for more meetings. You'll have your positional meeting about practice. Usually that's probably like an hour to 2 hours, depending on if you guys had a good day or a bad day. Hopefully you had a good day, because a bad day, you're going to be tired as hell at the end of the day. But before the position meetings even start, you have your team meeting. Then you go over your special team stuff you did in practice, then the coach, head coach, will have whatever he wants to address that at that point. So usually the day will go from 6 a.m. to about 10 p.m. And that's for 30 days straight in August before you even get into a game. Think about when the school season starts, then you got class adding into it. So now you in class from, we'll say you start class at 8, end at 2. You go get lunch and go right to meetings at 2 p.m. You meet for about 2 hours, whether that's special teams again or positional meetings. And practice will be at 4. And then after that, whether your coach wants you to stay after or however your process is for after practice and meetings and whatnot is based on the team. But that's every day too. So that's even more hectic because now it's the real thing. So now you're in the season. So it just means more.
Like your body's getting taxed at that point now too.
Yeah, it's a lot, but like it's what you signed up for and it's what you fall in love with. So you get used to it real quick.
I mean, we're basketball players and we can tell you that the schedule is like very hectic, and then you're telling me that and I'm like, wow, that's nothing what football players be going through. And that just shows kind of like what it's like to be a college student athlete, bro. It's a real grind, and like
you
just described it perfectly.
But it's a grind at all levels, though. People don't understand sometimes, which I don't like. But they think that because it's a D3, D2, that it's different than D1. But you're all putting in the same work.
Same amount of time.
Everyone's in camp at the same time in August. Season starts and ends all at the same time. So,
speaking of facts, we talk about that a lot. But I kind of want to shift the conversation to, you know, like some of your actual seasons. And first thing I'm wondering about, like you, since you've been in college, Holy Cross hasn't lost a Patriot League title. You guys split it this year, but this makes it 6 straight years of Holy Cross winning the Patriot League, which is crazy. So just generally, like, what makes Holy Cross so dominant in the Patriot League? Is it, you know, the recruitment, you guys getting in the best guys? Just what are you is making the success go crazy?
The main piece is really the guys in the locker room, right? Everyone buying into each other and honestly supporting each other through thick and thin, really. We start in June. Like I said, I got to go to JMU in June. So we do the same thing at Holy Cross. And that's all that grit and grind y'all are doing together in the summer when everyone else is at beaches and parties and having fun. And y'all are up at school in a dorm room that sometimes the AC probably not even working yet. And y'all are grinding out together in the hot sun. And one of the big things that we do at Holy Cross too is we ran with sweaters and hats on in the summer. So you over here dying, but at the same time, the dude next to you is in a sweater and a hat too, dying with you. So it kind of just builds that tight-knit connection that brings it to the field, and you just start dominating dudes. Luckily, we had really, really good staff that was able to put us in the best position to win. And obviously, you can see we won 6 straight or 5 straight with that staff. And then we also had a really, really good strength coach who got us really strong. So we were able to compete with teams like ACCs when we played BC and Army and all that stuff. So it's really the guys in the locker room buying into the program and what the coaches want, and us just supporting each other and grinding it up.
Yo, that was Coach Chesney. He implemented the running sweaters, or that was the new coaching staff?
No, so that was the old staff when we did that. We did it this year, too, because our strength coach ended up staying with us this year. So I'm assuming it was our strength coach thing, but I don't know entirely who chose to do it. But
that's tough.
That is tough.
I wouldn't really know how to react with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to simulate shoulder pads and a helmet.
Okay.
So while you dying in heat of a sweater, like a crew neck sweater and a beanie, pads should be easier, right? But
that definitely probably pays off. You could probably tell it like mid-game, like
you're sweating through the sweater, sweating through the hat, and then you get used to it at some point, but. Yeah, it sucks at first.
Nah, I feel that. But so another year you guys had a really good year. It was 2022. Was this your redshirt sophomore year or this was?
Yeah, my freshman year was I had a redshirt my freshman year.
Okay, so words. So your redshirt sophomore year, you guys were 12-1, 6-0 in the conference, and you made it to the FCS playoffs, which is always a good thing. Holy Cross kind of does that often, but that's big time. And I kind of want to hear like, did you feel like an energy shift? What's the difference in, you know, regular season play to FCS playoffs? And then just give a little insight in like your process going into those games. I know you guys beat the 15th seed and lost to the number one seed. So just tell me about that year a little bit in the FCS playoffs.
Yeah. So, I mean, we treated every game like it was the same, whether it was playoffs or not, right? I mean, that's the only reason how we went 12-0 was grinding it out every week, every Saturday. So that was that. In terms of playoffs, it was truly a feeling like no other, man. You go fly all the way to South Dakota, which yeah, probably, I don't know if you guys ever been there, but there ain't nothing but grass fields and random stores, right? So there ain't nothing out there except just football. So a lot of those kids at South Dakota, North Dakotas, the Montana States, they're all homegrown. You're born to play football.
Yeah.
So we go down there and the environment is, it's a D1 college football environment. Like you're, it's on third down and there it's loud. You can't hear anything at all. So it was a great feeling. You get a little NCAA patch, which is cool. But I mean, we treated every game like it was like a playoff game or not. So, and we grinded it out, happened to lose to the best team that I think that year ended up winning it. And we were in a game until the fourth quarter. So, it's just a few mistakes. I think that could have went our way and we probably would have won. Who knows? But it was really a surreal feeling, especially because I was a sophomore. It's the first time I've ever gone really that far in a big stage. So it was cool, man. I loved it.
That's fire, bro. Because, like, you got to think about it, too. Like you're saying, you're a sophomore and you're seeing that. You're like, damn, man, I want to experience this every year, bro.
Yeah, every year, right?
You know what I mean? Like, we went to – like the same thing with us. Like we went to the tournament my sophomore year and like, I didn't really play that much that year, but like seeing that, like going to the NCAA tournament with my guys, like that was like, that made me want to work even that much harder in the summer, bro. Like I want to get back here. It was fire. You know
plus
what I mean?
You get that deep and that far, then you start feeling like the grind and all the hard work is starting to finally pay off. And you're like, man, maybe this was the sweaters and hats were worth, I guess, what's about to be paid out to us. So.
Nah, 100%. Well, we got a lot more to talk about your chapter going to JMU, so stay with us while I take a quick break.
All right, we are back. Not Even D2 podcast with my guy, Curtis. So we kind of talked about this at the start, Brody, but just kind of walk us through after you finished up your senior year at Holy Cross, your mindset heading into your extra year of eligibility that you did have, what the transfer portal was like, and why ultimately did you choose JMU?
The transfer portal, man, is a cold world, right? The transfer portal is a cold world because usually you think you're going to go in the transfer portal, so I'm going to pick you up quick, right? Mm. It's not like that at all because every team has what they want in a guy. Like they look for something specific. A lot of the portal is kind of compared to like NFL free agency in a way. Mm. You pick a guy up, take him for a year, you either trade him or he just gets dropped or whatever, however that works. It's really what the portal's like. A lot of kids use a portal for a one-year thing. You go in there for a fifth year like I'm doing, and then you're gone for a year. So some teams may want that. Some teams may not want that. My biggest piece, what kind of messed me up a little bit in the portal, was a lot of people wanted a spring transfer, in which I couldn't go in the spring because I had to finish my degree at Holy Cross first. So that kind of – a lot of teams are like, all right, we really want you. Like, we love your tape. We think you're a great player, but you can't come in the spring, so we got to, like, move on with this thing and look for someone else that can come in the spring. So, which that sucked. Granted, I wanted to go to JMU in the first place anyways because my old staff was there and everything that I committed to in the first place at Holy Cross, I just moved down to Virginia. Mm-hmm. So it was almost like a no-brainer for me, really. My first ever real safeties coach was down there. So, like, my love for him is through the roof, really. He was there for me at the tough times when I needed it the most. So, I knew what I was going to get if I go to JMU. I went down there, visited the campus. The campus was beautiful. So I really just fell in love with the team, really, and kind of just the energy. Practice was the same at Holy Cross. So, like, kind of felt like I was in, like, a nostalgic little feeling going on. But, yeah, like, it was a no-brainer for me, really. The staff was the same staff I had previously. So I knew that was the spot.
Nah, that's a dope story. And definitely shout out to your first safeties coach because – everybody that's been recruited remembers the first coach that, like, showed consistent love or was, like, there for them when they needed it. So, definitely shout out to him, and he's getting a dog in return. Yeah. But I'm kind of curious, like, when you were deciding or thinking about what schools, how much of, like, scheme went into that? Because, like, obviously you have strengths, but you have weaknesses too. So, how important was that knowing, like, all right, I know this defense is similar to the defense I just was running, had a successful year. And so, how important was that for you?
It was the number one question when coaches would ask, like, if you've got any questions for me, that was the first question I'd ask is what defense they run, the scheme they run, and how they plan to utilize me in their defense. Because I don't want to commit to a team that's only going to use me to be a depth guy. Like, I don't got time for that. I got 6 months to play ball and I'm trying to get to the next level. So that was the big question. So, and then it would honestly help me to know whether I'd have to do a lot of studying in the playbook or whether a lot of things would transfer over. So it'd be a little easier for me. So that was the biggest question was what defense? And then the second biggest question was who's leaving and who's staying? Because their team also might have transfers who are leaving, but then at the same time, they also might be bringing in more safeties that I don't know about. So then it comes back to the question is if you think I'm going to be someone that's going to produce a lot, like, am I going to be a 30-play snap guy or am I going to be a 60-play snap guy? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions that went into it, and those are really the two biggest ones because obviously I can't commit to a team where I'm barely going to play. That's not what I'm trying to do.
I know you said JMU was – ultimately, like, that you knew you wanted to go there, but did you feel like you were given a lot of transparency from other coaches that you were talking to in the transfer portal? Like, they were telling you, like, exactly, they were giving you the answers that you were trying to hear. You know what I'm saying? Like, were they being real with you about your situation?
So, like, a lot of them actually, it felt like they're being real with me too. So I didn't have a lot of negative thoughts towards the coach or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'll give you the three kind of main schools I really wanted to go to. First being JMU, in which their grad student had ended up leaving. So the kids that were to follow were a few freshmen, in which is good because then obviously I got to compete with them. But at the same time, I know I have a larger opportunity to make the spot. The next school was Hawaii. I didn't get a chance to go out to Hawaii, obviously, because travel is like 26 hours and whatnot. Yeah. But they had an open spot for me too. Their defense was a lot of man defense, which is perfect. It's a lot of what we did at Holy Cross. So that transition was easy for me, and that could have been a no-brainer as well. And then the next big one that I really wanted was Wyoming. Reason being, I had a friend named Ayur Asante who actually just happened to finish a tryout with the New York Giants this past year. He went to Wyoming, and he loved it out there. He obviously had the chance, and I got to watch his whole journey with him. I even went to his bowl game in Arizona when they played, I believe it was Toledo. Yeah, so he loved it, man. They have, like, I believe they're, like, the number one facilities in the country. So, and then I was able to watch him grow as a player and get a chance at the next level. So I was like, if he went there and did the same thing and Wyoming's talking to me about it, like, I could be in the same shoes, learn from what he liked, what he didn't like, and, you know, kind of create my own path there as well. So, but unfortunately, Wyoming wanted me to be a spring guy, which I explained to you earlier, which didn't work out for us. But
yeah. Going back to, like, Ruta's point on transparency, it's good that you committed to a place, like, you know the coach, you trust Coach Chesney, because, like, we hear stories all the time of athletes, like, committing to a school and saying, like, oh, they promised me this, this, and that. And then when production comes, it's like they're not getting what they were just promised. So definitely
can see. For instance, in your situation, is like the Matthew Sluka thing. I don't know if y'all ever heard that. The quarterback from UNLV. He was.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say he was promised, but I believe he was told that he was going to get like $100,000 or something like that in NIL.
He went to Holy Cross, bro, right?
He did. Yes. Yeah. Oh. So he ended up going to UNLV for his fifth year, played, I think, 3 or 4 games, and their agreement, whatever it was, didn't go the way it was supposed to. So he ended up sitting out the whole year. So being told you're going to get something and not actually get it is true. That's crazy. Now he's at JMU too, if you guys didn't know.
Hey, reunited, bro. That's tough.
Yeah, so it's fresh.
I was going to say, like, so obviously, like, there's been a lot of changes to college football and college sports in general with, like, NIL and the transfer portal. So I'm just wondering, like, you're playing in the FCS division, which is still, like, a lot of high-level football. So I'm just curious, like, obviously a lot of, like, you know, the teams like Colorado or Alabama and schools like that are going to probably get affected more with that type of stuff. So I'm wondering if, like, the effects of NIL, transfer portal, are trickling down to, like, the FCS level and, like, schools like the Patriot League and stuff like that.
Not as much in the FCS yet. Reason being, I don't think FCS teams, depending on what the team is, have enough money, really, to kind of disperse it to their students. Mm-hmm. I don't think FCS gets a lot of revenue or as much love as they should, because mm-hmm. a lot of it's obviously focused on teams like the Georgias and the Bamas and Notre mm-hmm. Dames, Michigans, all that. So I think NIL is in a way kind of ruined football, really, because mm-hmm. a lot of kids, you're really only going to a school based on whether they're going to pay you or not, rather than going because you want to play football and make it somewhere. even then, some kids are even making more money in college than they will in the NFL. Like, you have a guy like Dave Portnoy who's offering $2 million or $3 million to the Michigan starting quarterback. So you got teams like kids that are committed to Texas and decommitting and going to Michigan because they're going to get $3 million.
Yeah.
So NIL has played a big, big piece into football. And even then, now it's starting to get into basketball. Because I read something that the BYU commit, the number one kid in the country, went to BYU because he getting paid $5-6 million or whatever it was. Like, without NIL, I don't think BYU gets that guy. So,
yeah, I definitely think it changes. I want to say it necessarily ruins it, just because, you know, like, it doesn't mean that the football is bad now that people are getting NIL.
I don't think it's bad. I just think it kind of takes away like the love for the game itself a little bit. Yeah,
that's fair. That's
like you're because. Like, and the money has a piece into where you're going to go now, rather than if you had no money 4 years ago, like you're picking a school based off of the students, the location, the coaches and all that stuff. Like, now kids are just going to go, like, I don't care if their team's good or not. They're going to pay me this much amount of money. So,
great point. I was kind of curious, since we're talking about NIL, if you could share, like, where you are you getting anything? I think that can be public info.
I'm getting a little bit. I'll leave it at that.
I respect it.
I was gonna say, so with the NIL discussion, I just want to add something to it. Like, to your point, Curtis, like, I remember they were talking about after Ohio State won the Natty, if Jeremiah Smith was gonna stay, bro, because someone was gonna offer him a crazy NIL package. So, like, that's kind of like a testament to your point about how, like, I don't know if Jeremiah Smith's gonna leave Ohio State because it's a great situation, but I'm just saying, like, maybe other guys, they throw those M's at them and they're like, yo, come to this school.
Yeah,
we'll pay you the bag. And, you know what I'm saying? You come play football for us. Yeah. And like you're saying, it kind of takes away from, like, you're picking a school because you love the staff, you love the environment, and you want to stay there and stay with the grind. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
crazy time.
But in a way, you kind of understand it, man. Like, you're here to get paid and stuff. So yeah, as much as you may hate it, but at the same time, you got to love it because you get money. So it's tough.
Nah, bro, saying now he don't care about it because he getting that money now. It's coming in. But, yo, I mean, we kind of talked about it. You said, like, your goal is to play at the next level. But I'm kind of curious, what are your, like, 2025 season goals for Curtis? Like, what are you trying to do on the field at JMU in your transition?
Me personally, I'm trying to do what I did in this past season, right, get a lot of accolades. First team, things like that, and then some. I'm trying to really bring the team to a national playoff appearance. Like, you have teams like Clemson, SMU. Like, it's possible to be able to play the Oregons, the Notre Dames, all that. So that's my biggest goal, is to really just to win as many football games as I can while also producing enough to where I'm doing something out there and not just wasting space.
I mean, JMU, I'm pretty sure they were ranked this year at least a couple weeks in the top 25.
They might have been. I know that they were first or like top 10 in a few stats and like turnovers and things like that. So, like, they had a lot of success this year under Coach Chesney, and he's done a great job with James Madison.
Yeah, I mean, they played in the bowl game last year, so doing something.
Yeah, right.
That's tough. So, Curtis,
the way Virginia, they would have thought that he had a losing season because they wanted to cut throat, man. He was 8-4, and Twitter was reaming him.
That's how it is, bro. A lot of these teams want instant success, or just, you know, their level or the I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but just what they want from a program is just consistent success. And sometimes, like, it's not always going to be pretty, bro. Like, you're going to have, and 9-4 is not even bad. 8-4, whatever it was, like, that's not bad. It's just like some people are just like looking at that like, oh, like, come on, we could do even better. Which is like, bro, like, it's not. Sometimes it doesn't go your way. Sometimes,
yeah. It was tough because their previous coach was at Indiana now and ended up playing Notre Dame in the playoffs. So they're seeing like an 8-4 season, which is probably some people's best season, as a losing season, because previously I think they went like 10-2 or something. And now the coach that they just had is in the playoffs. So, like, in a way, it's understandable. But at the same time, first year head coach, make it to a bowl game and go 9-4. Like, it's not a bad thing.
Very tough, bro. It's very tough, and definitely, like, a bright.
That's the foundation and honestly the standard now. So it's only up from there.
Definitely a bright future at JMU, Brody. And this going to wrap it up with the last question, bro. Obviously we talked through your journey playing football in New Hampshire. You know what I'm saying? Like, talking about how there's not a lot of recruitment, or not a lot of recruitment coming out of New Hampshire, and you made it out of there, going to Holy Cross, being a winner at Holy Cross, a lot of different accolades, being a really high, like, highly touted player coming out of Holy Cross, and now you're at JMU, and you're going to kill it there. So how does it feel to have an opportunity to compete in the FBS division of college football after 4 years at FCS school? Talk about that.
Man, it's surreal, right? Like, all that hard work, like I said, from the beginning, it's like, in a way, kind of paying off, right? I put myself in a position where I could be so successful where people on the FBS level think I can compete and produce for them, right? And then FBS kids make it to the league. So this is another opportunity for me to play against really high talented kids and hopefully get my name out there a little bit more than it already is and get a chance at the league at some point, right? So, and then kind of push the narrative that New Hampshire does have ball players, and hopefully I can get that thing going and get some more eyes on the state.
Hey, bro, definitely going to be rooting for you this season, but also in the future. Like, definitely, because get your feet in the door, and then it's up to Curtis Harris at that point.
But yeah, yeah, you're not wrong.
We're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition, so let us know you're ready for rapid fire.
Go ahead.
All right, so first rapid fire question, Curtis. Just name me some of your favorite top three artists that you're listening to right now.
Top three artists right now. Huh? All time or just currently what I'm listening to?
Currently what you're listening to.
All right. No order.
No order.
I'm going to go Gunna.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Babytron.
Yeah.
I'm not tapped, but he's tough. But I'm not tapped, but he's solid, though.
I'm telling you, man, you got to tap in. I get it.
My brother loves him. I can't get behind it, bro.
I get it, but you got to tap in. And then I'm going to go with Drake because I love Drake.
Damn, we've had a lot of Drake fans on this show, bro. I don't know if I could respect that anymore, man. next rapid fire question. Like, funniest teammate that you've ever had.
Funniest teammate ever?
Ooh, like top three.
That's tough, man. Cause I had a lot of characters throughout my life in football. I'll go one of my favorites to laugh about all the time, Cam Moulton. He played corner and safety for us. This is all Holy Cross guys. Another one's probably going to be Max Mosey, receiver number 13 that plays this year. Really good. And then probably one of my favorites, probably a kid named John Young, because I can always – good banter with him. We always laugh all the time, so probably make me laugh a lot.
And then last rapid-fire question. This is kind of a different one, and if you need me to rephrase it, I can. But obviously you played basketball in high school and pretty much your whole life growing up too. And you're playing college football now, but I'm just curious, like, the feeling of making a big play, is it better in basketball or is it better in football? You know what I mean? When you hit like a big three or like chase down.
Yeah.
Like, big tackle. This past year. So
yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to be biased, right? I'll give you both instances on why I like both. I'm going to be biased to football. Reason being, cause pick or pick six, man, like you just pick off a quarterback and score. Like, that's a big feeling. Or even like a fourth down stop or like booming somebody coming downhill. Like, you feel big and bad in that moment and you start talking bad. So that's a good feeling. And then in basketball, like, there's no feeling like crossing somebody up and hitting a three or coming down for a game, hitting a three or something. Like, y'all know what that feels like. So, like, to dominate in basketball is a great feeling as well, but also do something in football is tough. Nah, but I'm going to be biased. I'm going to say football.
That's a great question. But we got to move to the top five. So basically, I'm just going to ask you a simple question. And this edition is going to be the best DBs you've played with. So just give me five of the best DBs you've played with throughout your career.
All right. No order again. We'll go Walter Reynolds.
Tell me where they played at too.
Okay. So he played at Holy Cross for 5 years and then ended up transferring to in the MAC and went to University of Ohio. He's currently in the process of getting to the league right now. So he's been training throughout this whole time. The next one is Terrell Prince, probably one of the best versatile, well-rounded football players, savvy guys I've watched and played with. I learned so much from him. Honestly, he's probably a big part of why I play the way I play. He was at Holy Cross for all 5 years. He's now in the corporate world. The third person I'm going to go with is John Smith. He played corner for us at Holy Cross for 5 years. He had a pro day tryout for the New York Jets. So he's now I believe in the corporate world or working around some type of sports management job and whatnot. The fourth one I'm going to go with is one of my best friends, Jake Darmolowicz. Me and him are like really, really close friends. So all the time on the field, we didn't really have to talk to each other because we kind of just knew how we played. He played with me all 4 years and is now at Colorado State for his fifth year in the Mountain West. So hopefully he balls out over there. What are we at? Three, four?
One more.
And then I'm going to go with Terrence Spence. He was a corner for us at Holy Cross for all 4 years and then transferred to James Madison, hooped his senior, his fifth year. He had led the nation in interceptions and was in the running for best DB in the country and is now playing in the Hula Bowl for an all-star game. So definitely check him out if y'all don't know who he is. So you'll definitely see him in the league one day. He's like a 6'2", 6'3", corner. So really good guy.
That's tough, bro. Definitely some DBs that are studs, bro. Like you said, that's probably the hardest position. If you could lock somebody up, that's probably another great feeling in football. And you just like,
yo. You just strap, bro. Yeah.
Yeah.
But same thing as defense. If you and somebody grill, strapping them up. It's 5 second turnover, bro. You getting that mode real quick. Yeah.
But that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate you joining the show today, bro. Definitely going to be following your chapter at JMU. Good luck for the rest of your career, my guy.
No doubt. Thank y'all for having me, man. It means a lot.
All right, before we end this episode, we're going to do another segment of Only in D3 where Ruta and I tell you what it's like to be a college student athlete in Division III and stories you probably want to hear at like high major schools or Division I, Division II. So I'll start this week. I don't know if this is Only in D3 or Only in Alfred, but we had a recovery lift and we pulled up to the weight room. And there was already a team in there. The track team was in there. Mm-hmm. And we're like, damn, like, I don't really know what to do. So we went back in the locker room. The strength coach came and was like, yeah, we'll just bring you guys to another room and you guys can do like the stretching video there. So we go into like this yoga room or I don't even know what it's called. But so he's in there. He's trying to connect the iPad to the Apple TV. And like the Wi-Fi is just not working, bro. So we're just chilling there. It's probably 10 minutes past our start time. People getting agitated, like, yo, I could have been home. Like, this is bullshit, da, da, da. And then, so we ended up having to Gabe Elday, number 5. He led us through a stretching drill through the video that he was watching, but nobody else could see it. So it was just like a funny story. We got kicked out because the track team was already in there. And then Apple or Wi-Fi is not working, so then Gabe just has to lead us, which shout out to my boy, but that's my Only in D3 segment, and I'll wait for yours.
Nah, dude, the struggle of having to use the weight room when another team is in there, like, that shit, and especially, like, in the winter, so usually at Utica, like, we have a dome at Utica where, like, we would go down to in the fall and spring, we would go down to the dome and lift because they have, it's more like free weights and weight racks and, like, a track. So we could do, you know, different types of exercises and stuff. But in the winter, obviously, we're not going to walk down. So we just stay in the AC. So we have to use, like, the gym that most of the students use. So when we have to go do a lift and, like, the rest of the student body is, like, trying to get their, like, pump, I'm like, bro, like, like, it's just, like, funny because, like, we're doing, like, athletic movements and, like, everyone else is doing, like, such different workouts. You know what I'm saying? So it's definitely an interesting environment. So my Only in D3 story, it's a little explicit, to be honest, but hey, bro, I'm just going to say it. So basically, we played Poly on Tuesday, and this is a very short one, but we played Poly on Tuesday, and it was a great game. I mean, great environment, great for the city of Utica, got a lot of turnout, you know what I mean, a lot of people from the city of Utica. And, you know, we tried to have the herd there, which is like the fan base. A lot of the Utica, like Utica University fans were there, but I'd probably say like it wasn't like an overwhelming amount, like in terms of like only Utica University. Like there were some like Poly fans, you know, who were also in the gym that were loud too. But I just remember this one specific moment when we were walking out of the locker room at halftime. I remember, so we have to walk by the bleachers and also like the entrance, like there's two entrances to the gym. Yeah. And we have to walk by that to get on like the way on, because visitors, you guys get on the other side, right? So we don't have to cross paths. So we got in we were walking on the gym on our side, and I'm walking onto the court, and I'm like, yo, what's that smell, bro? I'm like, keep smelling it. I get this aroma, and it's an aroma of, I'll just say the word starts with a W and it ends with a D. And I get this aroma, and I'm like, yo, it smells like blank in here. Like, what the heck? So I talked to John, who's like one of the like facilities manager. He has a bunch of different titles here. I'm like, yo, John, you smell that? He starts dying laughing. Devin starts I'm next to Devin. He hears me. He starts dying laughing. And I was like, freaking Utica, man, only in Utica. So that's my only D3 story. Whoever came to the game smelled like blank. So it was definitely a funny little moment in between the game.
Nah, that's funny. Definitely. I mean, I'm not going to try to show too much of myself, but I respect whoever did that. It's legal now, but that's our segment of Only in D3. If you like that segment or this episode, definitely subscribe, leave a like, or follow us at Not Even D2. And let's hear from our Empire 8 Player of the Week. Introducing a new segment where we hear from this week's Empire 8 Player of the Week. We're going to try to do both women's and men's every week, but unfortunately, this week we didn't get to talk with Brandon Harris. We were dealing with some technical difficulties, but big thanks to Sydney and Grace. They got on short notice. They had really big weeks. Grace plays for Alpha University. Sydney for the undefeated St. John Fisher Cardinals. I should say undefeated in conference, but two really good conversations. Grace had a really big week where she scored her 1,000 point in college, hit a buzzer beater for the win. Averaged over 20 points this week. And then Sydney, you know, leading the charge for an undefeated team. They're going into Brockport and Geneseo, two of the best teams in the Empire 8. So two really good conversations. And let's hear from Sydney Tommaso. All right, we are here with this week's Empire 8 Co-Player of the Week. Sydney had a great week, averaged 19 points, 9.3 rebounds in a 2-0 week. You guys beat your rival Nazareth and Utica. I want to hear a little about both of these games because Nazareth, we know that's an intense matchup. You guys killed, or it was a good game, but you had 23 points. And then in Utica, you had a big night, 25 points, 13 rebounds, which is crazy. So just talk a little about both of those games, those matchups, and your perspective of the games.
Yeah, obviously never gets old beating Naz. So that was really fun for us on Tuesday, especially on our home court. Definitely intense coming in. You know, with Utica and Naz, our team's just outsized in pretty much every game. I'm playing a four this year, so it's a little different. But I think we came in ready to go and really just brought a lot of intensity in that first half, and that led us to winning that game. With Utica, I think, again, outsized. So we kind of had to shoot a little bit more on the perimeter because a lot of teams have been playing a zone as well, just because me and my teammate Katie Moravec, we like to get to the rim. That's mm-hmm. kind of been our game plan for the past year. So yeah. A lot of teams are noticing that and switching it up on us. But again, came out ready to play. And Utica kind of started coming back in the second half, but we stayed level and won the game. So
Naz Fisher is definitely a crazy environment. And, yeah. You know, you're a senior this year, so you kind of experienced a lot of those battles. So just give the viewers a little bit of an insight into that real quick.
Yeah, honestly, it's my favorite game of the year. Some people get nervous. I just think it's more excited for me. It's so much fun. Great atmosphere. All the fans come out for those games. So it's intense, but it's fun.
It's definitely awesome when you can have those type of battles, like especially in the regular season when it's like not even playoff time, but you still feel like that type of environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely cool stuff. But I wanted to ask you about your new coach this year, mm-hmm. Coach Cartmill. And I just wanted to I was kind of wondering, like, obviously your coach is experienced and talented, but you're a senior this year, obviously a leader on the team. So has she kind of relied on you at all this year and her transition to Fisher?
Yeah, I think a little bit at the beginning, especially just getting to know the girls and kind of coming into Fisher, but throughout the season, more with E8 stuff, like we just talked about with the Naz-Fisher rivalry. I feel like you never really know how that game goes until you're in the environment. And then just like with the teams and a little bit with scouting stuff with the other girls, just because I've been here for 3 years. So,
yeah, rely on the vet. I definitely hear that. But I mean, you guys have a big, big weekend coming up. So on Friday, you guys play Brockport first, right?
Geneseo first.
Okay, so Geneseo and both of these teams, Brockport and Geneseo, are really tough. But Geneseo, 10-1 right now in the conference, going to be a battle. And then Brockport the following day, the two undefeated teams head-to-head. So just give me like a sneak peek on your mindset, those games, and what you're thinking going into them.
I think big thing for both games is going to be keeping our composure. You know, they're going to go on runs. We're going to go on runs. We're both really good teams and just trying to stay level headed, and move forward throughout the game and definitely playing to our intensity level all four quarters. I think we've kind of struggled with that this year. But obviously these games are huge and we're going to have to, you know, keep the intensity going the whole entire game.
Yeah, this is my last question for you, but is that something that you guys are talking about in the locker room? Like, we want to host, we want to get the one seed, or are you guys just, like, ready for playoffs no matter what?
I mean, obviously, one seed is our goal. We want to host. We've been the host the last 3 years that I've been here. Home court advantage is definitely nice. But main goal is winning E8s again. That's what we want to get done.
Well, congrats on the big week, player of the week, co-player with Grace, and good luck this weekend. Definitely going to be following and hope you – I can't put my predictions or picks out there, but just good luck.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
All right, we are here with this week's Empire 8 player of the week, my dog Grace Rittenhouse. Crazy week for you this week. Got your 1K ball, averaged 20 throughout the week. You shot 58% from three this week, which is crazy. And I know why. It was because you was in the gym this past week getting them up. But, I mean, got your 1K ball, hit a game winner. So it was just a crazy, crazy week. I want to know, like, what made you so dominant this week? What allowed you to be so successful?
I think just being, like, grounded and knowing how big of a week it was for our team is what, like, sparked the big performance. We've talked about energy a lot, like throughout the postseason last year and then early season this year, and just being able to like bring the consistent positive energy is what we really like needed this week. Beating Houghton Tuesday was obviously a really big game for us and came with like a lot of emotions. And then we had Sage Friday where we lost in overtime, which was tough and stung quite a bit, but then we were able to reset and focus on Hardwick Saturday and get the win and just like bring positive energy, and that's really what we focused on.
Yeah. Do you feel like now you're fifth year, it's like they look at you as like the leader. Do you feel like it's on your shoulders like to bounce back after some of those tough losses like against Sage, or like, talk about that?
A little, but I feel like we all know our roles pretty well and everyone has a role. And we're able to, like, lean on each other in those times and have, like, those tough conversations, like, after the game. For Sage, we did a lot of time, like, debriefing and just talking about, like, what happened and how our energy is ultimately what we feel costed us. But I feel like we all have really good relationships, so that kind of, like, helps with just knowing what we need to do to come back the next day and get the dub.
Yeah, definitely respect that.
I was going to say, it's definitely cool that you guys can just communicate like that and just, you know, be honest with each other. Like, that's good.
Yeah, for sure.
No, but I mentioned you hit a game winner. It was a buzzer beater. Well, first, I just want to hear, like, if you can walk us through, like, the huddle, what was drawn up, like, and then just your reactions to hitting the buzzer.
Yeah, so it was, like, back and forth the whole game. There was, like, 11 lead changes during that game. It was crazy. But came down, there was like a minute left. We were tied. They hit a three. There was like me and Jada were on the floor, just like defensive breakdown. Not like we were trying our best, but like ultimately they got the three to put them up by three. K came into the huddle. Coach advanced the ball. We were just like, we need, like, we all weren't panicked yet because we, like, we knew we could win the game. And so he drew up a play. It was ultimately supposed to get Jaden Chess just a layup. She found Jada Felker on the perimeter. Jada knocked down that three, tied game again. We were like, okay, now we just need to focus on defense and, like, getting a clean stop no matter what. And so we got the clean stop, got the ball back with, like, 1.1 seconds to go. We came in. We all were just, like, hyped up but also just, like, nervous and, like, feeling the pressure. Coach Mike just kept saying to us, like, this pressure that you're feeling is, like, a privilege. Like, this is why we play the games. And so we all just locked in. He drew up the play, and it was actually on, like, a laminated sheet, and it was reversed. So, like, the play was supposed to be from the opposite side. And he was like, this is, like, the wrong way. And I was like, can you just draw it up? And he was like, I don't know it that well. And I was like, okay. So he just, like, explained it, like, as best he could. We all got, like, the understanding. He was going to take another timeout to, like, fully explain it, but he just was like, no, I feel good. So my job was, I just had to make the layup. Sam Fisher's pass was like,
that was a dime.
It was a dime. Like, my job was easy, just making that layup, but it was awesome. And definitely, like, one of my top career moments, just, like, being able to feel that. And, like, then all of my coaches and teammates rushed the floor, and it was like, it was awesome.
Yo, real quick, I just have a follow-up. So, like, we've been friends for quite some time, and, like, I feel like I know you, but I'm just kind of curious, were you nervous, like, when you first, like, oh, shit, the ball's actually coming right now, like, I got to put this in the hole, like, were you nervous or no?
Yeah, I was nervous, but I didn't really have time to think about it because I just, there was 1 second on the clock, so I was just like, in worst case, if I missed it, I knew that we had overtime, so it was just kind of like, if it works, then that's great, but we also felt like going into overtime, if we needed to, then we would have been okay.
I was going to say, because you said you had the easiest job, but ultimately you had to finish the lay. Like, that's a lot of pressure on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But confidence, though, love it for sure. I'm just, you know, we talked about you hitting 1K, and that's a milestone that a lot of people in college don't get. So I was wondering, how did it feel to hit 1K? What are some of your memories of that day? And just walk the viewers through just the feeling in general.
Yeah, ultimately, I'm just, like, super thankful for, like, all the support of, like, my coaches, teammates, my family. Like, without them, like, I would not be the player I am today. Going into the game, I kept saying, I'll take 0 points, not get my 1,000, and just get the win. But my teammates really wanted it for me, and my coaches really wanted it for me, and it was, like, super awesome. And to be able to say, like, that I scored 1,000 in high school and then scored it again in college is, like, not something that many players can say. So I'm just, like, ultimately super thankful for the opportunity and, like, all the people around me to make it so special.
How was it, like, just being able to have your family there, though, like, being able to celebrate that milestone with you?
Yeah, it was awesome. They made, like, shirts. They all, I'm sure you guys saw the pictures, but they did that in high school too. And when I saw them come into the game, they all had, like, posters, and I was just like, they're going to jinx it. I'm going to end up scoring, like, 0 points. But I came out hot in the first and got, like, 9 right away. And then went on a drought and didn't score the other 2 points till the fourth quarter. But it was definitely super special to have everyone there. My cousin actually lives in Florida. And it was against Sage. I had, like, the 25. And she was like, you can't let her get it today. And she wasn't supposed to come up until this weekend when we play Cuca and Elmira, but she, like, booked the plane ticket and, like, got there for Saturday's game, which I'm super thankful for.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to say something real quick. Like, Grace's family, Ruta, like, they're at every single game that they can make it to. Like, you always see Grace's family. So it definitely is a special moment, like, having everybody there for you. I definitely like to see stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. When you got your family behind you, you could do anything for sure. So definitely love that. But so, you know, just going into the rest of the season, I mean, you guys have Brockport and Geneseo, and Brockport is undefeated in the conference right now, and Geneseo is 10-1, and you guys are right behind Geneseo. So I'm just curious, like, obviously you have these two big games coming up. So how much, like, obviously you don't want to look ahead too much, but just talk about your feelings about the game and how much of your attention is really being paid to that upcoming weekend?
Yeah, for sure. We definitely know that we need to have that in the back of our minds. We play two very good teams this weekend, Cuca and Elmira, so we're not trying to like look too far past that. But all I can say now is I know it's going to be a great weekend next weekend. It's senior day on Saturday. We're going to have a lot of emotions all over the place, and we just kind of have to like go off of that. They're both very well coached programs with like very talented players on the team, but we just have to stay locked in and have positive energy, because if we can bring the consistent positive energy, then anything's possible. And we just need to like play our hearts out so we have no room for like regrets in the performance that we show.
Yeah, 100%. Well, congrats on the player of the week, Grace. I know the work you put in and you deserve all of it. So good luck the rest of the year and go Saxons.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.